I didn't need any graphic terminology. I just needed a few words and the invitation to speak them.
An Alaskan who survived a childhood rape testifies in favor of Aaron's Law. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, revitalizing the craft of making clothes for comfort and safety.
In my first memories, women would learn to make raincoats and other waterproof items before they get married to ensure a better chance at survival.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Right now, the legislature is facing a deficit that some leaders are describing as a $4 billion problem. With oil prices half what they were a year ago, lawmakers are having to cut agency budgets for the first time in years. Today, the Finance Committee in the House and the Senate held their first hearings on the operating budget. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez was there and joins us to talk about the legislature's approach. Hi, Alexandra.
Hello, Lori.
So, Alexandra, Governor Bill Walker submitted his endorsed budget about a week ago. How is his team describing it to the legislature?
Well, even though Budget Director Pat Pitney was just giving a high-level overview today, it definitely felt like a marathon at points. Between the House and the Senate Finance Committees, she presented and took questions for more than 4 hours. In each hearing, she had about a half dozen commissioners join her. She called them her lifelines. And they, you know, walked through all of the separate agency cuts. She highlighted the 6% cuts in agency operations that aren't governed by formulas, but she did acknowledge the cuts could go deeper. She described what they're offering as, you know, in her words, a prudent balance between slimming the budget and preventing a crash. But even with those cuts, there's still a deficit that looks like $3.5 billion now and could grow to $4 billion depending on the price of oil.
What are you hearing? Do lawmakers think it goes far enough?
There were a lot of compliments for getting a few hundred million dollars lower than the previous year, but there was a lot of talk of the need for further cuts. In the Senate Finance hearing this morning, Senator Peter Michicki, who's a Republican from Soldotna, he basically said, right now, we're not in an election year. He doesn't care if he's reelected at all, but some people are less likely to make big moves when they're having to campaign and come back to their district. So, he commented that if there's going to be a time for cuts, it should be now, and it shouldn't be next year. But when it comes to individual cuts, you know, every bit of spending has its own constituency. In the Senate Finance hearing, we heard Senator Donnie Olson, who's a Democrat who represents a good chunk of rural Alaska, mentioned that he thought there were discrepancies in the way that cuts in the Department of Transportation treated air taxis and pilots in rural parts of the state by increasing their landing fees, where people who live in places where they don't rely on air transit as much don't have to share that burden. So it's going to be a long, arduous process in getting the budget down further, but that's the goal.
What are lawmakers saying are their biggest areas of concern?
So one of the most interesting discussions that happened today was in the House Finance Committee room this afternoon when the issue of education came up. In the current budget submitted by the governor, education is only forward funded at 90%. And when you fund it at 90%, you know, you're not putting the entire amount of money in there, but you plan to. And so there was some description of that as a shell game by some legislators. And their financial analyst got up there and he said, you know, you could just decide not to forward fund education at all, but all that would really be doing is masking the size of the deficit. Because education funding is such a large part of the budget, it's over $1 billion, you could say, oh, we're just not going to forward fund education at all this year, and suddenly the deficit gets a lot smaller, even though you're going to have to pay for that down the road.
All right. Well, thanks for tracking all of it for us, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
That was APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reporting from Juneau. Alaska raised writer David Holthouse has told his story of being sexually abused as a child before. It's appeared in newspapers, on the radio, and on stage in New York City. But when he spoke in the Alaska Capitol building today, it was to support Aaron's Law, a bill that would require public schools statewide to provide age-appropriate K-12 sexual abuse education. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
David Holthouse has distinct childhood memories of learning how to stop, drop, and roll if he ever caught on fire. He remembers McGruff the crime dog telling him to stay away from strangers.
But neither McGruff nor anybody else warned me about the homecoming king.
In 1978, Holthouse was 7 years old, and his family had recently moved to Anchorage. They befriended another family with a daughter his age and a son in high school. The son was a star athlete, good-looking, and well-spoken. He was nice to Holthouse, but he changed his demeanor the night he invited Holthouse to his room to play karate.
He took those ninja throwing stars and he pushed me up against the wall and he started throwing them like a knife thrower at the circus. Thunk, thunk. So they land right next to me saying, don't move. Thunk, don't move. And then he took a samurai sword off the wall and he drew it out of the sheath and he put the blade to my neck and he said, if you don't do exactly what I want, I'm going to kill you.
Holthouse was raped and then threatened with death and the death of his family if he ever told anyone. After a state of shock, Holthouse quickly realized what happened, but he didn't know what to call it.
I didn't have a word for what had happened to me. To go back to McGruff, you know, McGruff had never taught me about safe touch and unsafe touch or good secrets and bad secrets. If I'd even been able to come forward and say, that thing we talked about in school, that happened to me. I didn't need any graphic terminology. I just needed a few words and the invitation to speak them.
He says if Aaron's Law had been in effect before he was raped, he might have never been assaulted.
Perpetrators of these crimes, they rely on shame and silence. They rely on our collective conspiracy of denial and silence about this. And if that silence had already been shattered, which educating every kid in a public school statewide will do, he might have thought that he couldn't get away with it.
But he says he can't know for sure. What he does know is that Aaron's Law will prevent kids from being sexually assaulted. He says schools need to have a curriculum and talk openly about it.
I'm not just speaking on my own behalf. I'm speaking for tens of thousands of Alaskan children and the adults they'll grow up to be. And what I'm saying is help us.
Democratic Representative Garen Tarr introduced the bill last year, and it appeared poised to become law. Then-Governor Sean Parnell supported Aaron's Law. The Senate passed it, and the House version had 21 co-sponsors. But the bill got stuck in committee. This year, there are four identical Aaron's Law bills, two from Republicans and two from Democrats. And Governor Bill Walker wants it on his desk. Democratic Senator Berta Gardner's version was the first to get a hearing in Senate Education. Tarr hopes the bill will pass this session. She understands some lawmakers are uncomfortable with Aaron's Law being a requirement, but she says there are likely community resources and private dollars available.
We approached the Rasmussen Foundation, Alaska Children's Trust, Matsu Health Foundation, and just put the idea out there of would they be a resource for helping implement a curriculum, and they all responded in a positive way.
Aaron's Law has passed in 20 states and is pending in 21 others, including Alaska. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Funding for the Department of Homeland Security will run out February 27th unless Congress can resolve an impasse over immigration policy riders the House added to a funding bill. Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan today stood with conservative lawmakers, including Texas Senator Ted Cruz, calling on the Senate to pass the House bill. Sullivan told reporters at the Capitol he wants to work with President Obama. In fact, he said he was headed to the White House this afternoon to watch him sign a veterans bill. But when it comes to Homeland Security funding, Sullivan says Democrats shouldn't support Obama's immigration policies.
And I think it's very important that we make the case that this is something the American people don't support and something the Constitution of the United States does not authorize.
The House bill blocks funding for executive orders that would temporarily shield millions of illegal immigrants from deportation. The Supreme Court hasn't ruled whether President Obama has the authority to issue the orders, which opponents call executive amnesty. Senate Democrats are demanding a bill free of the funding blocks, and time is running out. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a love story that begins on an island in the middle of the Bering Sea.
She smiled and had this amazing smile that just about knocked me out. So I turned around and walked out of the room.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Artist, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. The deadline is March the 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Federal regulators are recommending that Shell's disputed oil leases in the Chukchi Sea be left intact. That's the conclusion of a new assessment of Lease Sale 193, the 2008 auction where Shell picked up more than $2 billion worth of Arctic drilling prospects. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management released its latest analysis today after a federal appeals court ordered them to take another look at how much development the sale would trigger in the Chukchi Sea. Regulators had previously guessed that leases in the region could yield up to 1 billion barrels of oil. But Judge Ralph Beislein ruled that was an arbitrary figure. BOEM has revised its estimate, saying that companies could get up to 4 billion barrels of oil from the Chukchi. That worries environmentalists who are concerned about the risk of a spill. But BOEM isn't suggesting any changes to the lease sale. According to the study released today, quote, it continues to represent a reasonable balance between environmental, economic, and technical considerations. For more than 100 years, presidents have used the Antiquities Act to order permanent protections for federal land and resources at sea. Now, Alaska senators are looking to curb that authority before the Obama administration tries to apply it in the 49th state. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
This week, President Obama turned a Chicago park into the country's newest national monument, signing an executive order that put the Interior Department in charge of a historic resource. That process hasn't changed much since the Antiquities Act was passed in 1906. But if Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan had their way, things would work a little differently. They're co-sponsoring a bill that would require Congress and state lawmakers to sign off before a new national monument can take shape. Murkowski's pushed for that in the past, but spokesperson Matthew Felling says she has new concerns about the president's agenda for Alaska.
His aggression with the North Slope and Alaska's Arctic region, we just believe that this adds a sense of urgency to legislation that she already introduced originally last summer.
It's also hitting closer to home now that there's a campaign to get federal protection for waters around the Aleutian Islands. The Antiquities Act has only been used to create one national monument at sea. George W. Bush set that up in the Central Pacific Ocean, and last year, President Obama expanded it. It's now the world's biggest marine reserve, totally off limits to commercial activity. Conservation advocate Rick Steiner isn't going quite that far, but he says the Aleutian Islands are under threat.
Overfishing, shipping, habitat degradation, debris, climate change, what have you, that all need to be managed in an integrated way. So, you know, I'm sorry that the delegation is having this knee-jerk reaction to this potential.
They were strongly opposed this winter when Steiner helped nominate more than 500,000 square miles of the Bering Sea and the North Pacific as a marine sanctuary. Unlike monuments, marine sanctuaries are managed by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA has the power to assess fines for damaging protected resources in a sanctuary, which is something the Antiquities Act doesn't address. But NOAA ruled there wasn't enough backing from affected communities in the Aleutians, let alone elected officials, to move forward. Matt Brookhart is a policy chief in NOAA's Office of National Marine Sanctuaries.
We understand what it is that we don't want to see with the nomination, and that is the nomination comes from a community that is very focused on one or two interest groups.
While some conservationists and research groups are still interested in a sanctuary, Rick Steiner is taking a different tack. He's asked the White House to create marine monuments in the Aleutians, the Bering Strait, and the Arctic coastal plain. Steiner says he hasn't received a response, but as long as the president holds on to his veto power, Steiner also says he doesn't see much risk of Congress putting a cap on the ability to protect those areas. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Moving the Iditarod start from Anchorage to Fairbanks will impact businesses across the state. KTNA's Philip Manning has more.
The changing of the Iditarod's restart location to Fairbanks has some mushers excited. Four-time race winner Jeff King told KUAC's Emily Schwing that he's looking forward to the new route.
I'm personally thrilled, not because of any other reason than I love a new trail and I love going to new places. So I'm looking forward to some variation.
While mushers have expressed approval of the change, it comes with an economic impact to many businesses. Paul Roderick is the owner of Talkeetna Air Taxi. He says he had more than 30 passengers booked for a flight to the Rainy Pass checkpoint, a trip listed on the company's website at $650 per person. Normally, the Iditarod provides a monetary shot in the arm for businesses like his.
That's a pretty big hit, especially when you got like 30 or 40 people going somewhere. So we got to call all them and rework all the logistics, see what everybody wants to do.
Suzanne Rust of Rust Flying Services, her company has already canceled more than 75 day trips and that the number is likely to pass 100 cancellations. Paul Roderick says Talkeetna Air Taxi will still likely end up with business as a result of the 2015 Iditarod and that businesses and villages are working quickly to reorganize logistics.
I mean, they were getting phone calls at midnight last night, you know, looking for rooms and figuring out how they're going to switch everything basically from the interior like McGrath to basing solely out of the Yukon River.
Villages along the traditional Iditarod Trail will also miss out on the boost in visitors and money. Instead, that business will go to another set of villages further to the north. Iditarod CEO Stan Hooley says this year's race will include checkpoints in Koyukuk and Huslia for the first time.
Those are two communities with strong ties to the very beginnings of mushing. So I think it'll be exciting from that standpoint and meaningful in a lot of different ways.
After the ceremonial start on March 7th in Anchorage, the 2015 Iditarod will begin in earnest in Fairbanks on Monday, March 9th. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Students at the Cultural Center in Bethel recently learned the traditional art of gut sewing. Seal intestines were prized throughout Yupik history for their waterproof performance, and a culture bearer from Shefornik is teaching the skill. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
For most students, today is the first time they have ever worked with guts. Their 71-year-old instructor, however, Mary Dunuchuk, has a lifetime of experience with the traditional material. She says imagnitit, or gut parkas, were critical for survival in her youth.
The waterproof gut parkas were very important for men while hunting in the ocean. The way it reacts to moisture makes it a more effective insulated raincoat than most modern raincoats. In my first memories, women would learn to make raincoats and other waterproof items before they get married to ensure a better chance at survival. These days, I never see anyone practice the art anymore.
Revitalizing the practice is part of the goal of the workshop hosted by Bethel's Upit Pichirirait Cultural Center and sponsored by the Smithsonian Arctic Studies Center and the Anchorage Museum. Besides parkas, seal intestines were used to make all kinds of waterproof items like bags, mittens, boot linings, and even windows. Curator Sarah Owens explains students will be using two kinds of material.
There's going to be a mixture of native students who will be using seal intestine that Mary's providing, but there's also going to be non-native students like myself, and we will be using a substitute. We'll be using hog intestine to sew with, because it's actually illegal for us to be sewing the seal intestine.
Tunuchuk explains the process starts with the raw seal intestines, which are washed. She uses a dull scraper to remove the soft, fleshy material from a membrane, which is later painstakingly cleaned of any flesh or blood. It's washed in brine or fresh water before being inflated like a long balloon and hung to dry. Tunuchuk taught the class the basics of sewing and the use of tapakhnak, or grass, as spacers between the seams.
It's not just any grass, it's beech grass. They are flexible and we use them around the seams so we could tighten the thread without breaking the membrane. You have a tighter, more reinforced waterproof seam without tearing the intestine.
The students bent the edges of the material with their mouths, using their saliva to make it more flexible and hold its shape while sewing. Students end up having made an amber-colored translucent window. In ancient times, the window would have served as more of a skylight called tanqin. You pick for something that brightens. Bethel resident Annie Roach says she's at the class because she wanted to connect with her culture.
I have heard about some of the traditional skills and practices. I've always wanted to learn, and now I understand a small part of it.
Upit Pichirirait Cultural Center staff say there are plans for more workshops exploring traditional skills, like a doll-making class in the last week of March and a fish skin crafting class later in April. The seal intestines for the class were provided by Mary Dunuchuk, who processed the intestine from seals caught by her kids and grandkids. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Valentine's Day is just a few days away. KNOM producer Kristen Leffler found this story of two people who had given up on the idea of soulmates until they met each other on an island in the middle of the Bering Sea.
This story starts with Shanna. Shanna's a doctor in Nome, and she agreed to sit down with me to talk about one of my favorite things, love.
I definitely believed in soulmates when I was younger, and then that was something that had started, I think it started to just... had started to fade. I started to give up on the idea of soulmates. There's a lot of reasons why I came to Alaska. I want to go to a place where I get to do a lot of medicine, and we're kind of out here, we do pretty much everything. But also thinking that potentially the same kind of person who likes adventure and wants to serve in a community that's really underserved and who knows what they might be doing. Potentially, I could meet that person in Alaska.
Now meet Dave. Dave currently lives in Undalton, but he originally came to Alaska several years ago, drawn by the flying and teaching possibilities. Last year, he was a teacher out on the island of Little Diomede.
I wanted to go somewhere where there was a high teacher turnover rate and stick around and actually, you know, invest in the community and the kids.
All right. And so now what were some of your general beliefs about love?
Let's see. Love at first sight? No. Nah. I'm a science teacher. I know how science works. I don't buy that.
And so now, when would you say your love story begins?
As soon as I walked into the room and saw her.
And their paths crossed last May, when Shanna traveled to Little Diomede for a medical trip and stayed in the school.
We were just kind of getting settled in, and this guy came by. He was wearing a Hawaiian shirt that he calls his island shirt, since he lived out on the island of Diomede, and had a trucker mustache and longish hair and the brightest eyes and a big smile.
She smiled and had this amazing smile that just about knocked me out. So I turned around and walked out of the room.
Yeah, my impression was like, okay, he's just really busy because he's like, hey, you guys okay? All right, cool. See you later. I was like, that's really nice of him to come and check on us. But he must be also really busy.
And they didn't really think they would see each other again. But before Shanna left, they traded blog sites.
His blog is like the soulmate of my blog.
Blog comments turned into short emails, which turned into longer and longer emails.
We shared our lives with each other, and they're similar in a lot of ways. But then I sent him a poem.
And this poem, one of the lines in this poem was something, what did it say?
It's a poem by Hafiz, who is a Sufi poet, mystic from Persia. And it says, plant so that your own heart will grow, love so God will think.
Ah, I got kin in that body.
Ah, I got kin in that body. I should start inviting that soul over for coffee and rolls. Sing because this is a food our starving world needs. Laugh because that is the purest sound. And then I told him, it reminds me of you, especially the line, I should start inviting that soul over for coffee and rolls.
What got me was she said that this poem reminded her of me, and I'm like, wait, could that mean that, like, maybe she's kind of interested in it. Maybe she kind of likes me.
Yes, it turned out Shanna did like Dave. They had their first date in Anchorage, where they went flying. They had their second date in Nome, where Dave secretly got her ring size. And for their third date, well, Dave flew up to Nome again.
Sitting there in that 737, coming into Nome, I looked out the window, and I saw the most stunning, amazing, beautiful, low sunlight coming in over the Bering Sea.
It was a gorgeous day. It was right before the solstice, December 20th, and the sun was shining. It was like one of the brightest days we had had.
And I saw that and said, well, that's it. This is it. We got to go for a walk. Kept it simple. Asked her, will you marry me? And she kind of gasped. And
honestly, my first thought was like, are you serious? But I knew that could not be the first thing I say.
She knelt down beside me and said, a million times yes.
Yes. A million times yes.
In Nome, I'm Kristen Loeffler.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Lisa Fu in Juneau, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Charles Enoch in Bethel, and Kristen Loeffler in Nome. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the Health Insurance Marketplace. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Alaska Pacific University offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University is a private nonprofit offering small class sizes with a student-centered approach in the arts and sciences. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.